You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. And as always, hope you're having a good day. Things calmed down a little bit around the nation last night, mercifully, and we'll see what happens, what today brings. If you didn't listen to the show yesterday, in particular hour two, Mandy Milburn joined us, and my idea was to talk about other things. And when we were talking before he came on the air, you know, I asked him what he'd been doing. He said one of my two older sisters committed suicide, and I've been dealing with that. And so, if you have not listened to that, I would encourage you to listen to it. And I sent Andy a text. I said, you know, I taught him when he was a lieutenant. When you were a lieutenant, you were a marginal student, but you become a baller in your life. And the reason I enjoy having Andy on is that he's not afraid to speak the truth. And whether we're talking about, military affairs around the world, we're talking about, whatever issue we talk about, ethical leadership and all the things that Andy's come on and spoken about. He doesn't shy away from the truth, and he doesn't shy away from being honest. And I got a couple of emails, and I'll read one that's emblematic of that. And it's from the first sergeant from Hickory, North Carolina. "Sir, I just listened to yesterday's interview with Colonel Milburn. What a tug on the heart that was. It made my eyes sweat a little bit. But I can't imagine the loss of a child or a sibling, let alone both. Please pass on that he is in my prayers. I'm sure his willingness to talk about it will help countless others that heard him speak. Thanks, Mac, for always putting trauma in the spotlight so we can learn from it. Semper Fidelis." And so that's emblematic of the emails that I got. About it, and the people that called me and reacted to it. So I would encourage you, before I say another word today, I would encourage you to listen to that and take a minute to reflect. And if there's anybody that you think you ought to reach out to, by all means, do that. By all means, do that. And so, yesterday, I talked to you about, I'm bothered by the fact that nowhere have I seen anybody talking about the data point of how many black men have been killed by police officers, or black women have been killed by police officers. And the data trend for that, and that if you listen to the narrative that you see on TV, you would give answers like my daughters did when I asked them, how many do you think have been killed? And if you didn't hear me yesterday, I asked Colleen, she's 16, and she looked at me and she said 200. And I said 9, and she looked at me, she goes, 9? And I said, yep. She said, are you sure, Dad? And I said, I can show you if you want. She said, no, I believe you. And she said, wow, I didn't think that. Which I think most would be shocked, right? So I went out in the kitchen. I was getting ready to cook dinner. I grilled salmon. And I followed the chef's advice, and I flipped it, which I normally wouldn't do. Because salmon's a little bit of a delicate, issue. And so in my contemplation of flipping the salmon, I thought it will be much easier for me to start out with it sunny side down, let that cook, and then flip it, than it would be to cook it sunny side up, let the bottom cook, but the top still a little bit wiggly, and then when I flip it, that go everywhere. And as I said, it worked. Yeah. And so I would recommend it to you. Start sunny side down, at least if you're an inept cook like I am. Or you could buy one of those baskets that we all see at the store. That might be the best choice. Hello. So I walk out in the kitchen and I ask Catherine the same question. And she said 50. And I said 9. And Catherine immediately doubted me. She said, where are you getting this? And so I explained to her the thing that the Washington Post started after Ferguson. And she was skeptical of it. I said, it's the truth. I said, that number started out as twice that in 2015. And, you can discuss the reasons why it's come down, body camera, video, and things like that. But the trend is that it's come down both in numbers and percentage of the total. I said in numbers it's come down 56%, and in terms of a percentage, it started out as 40% of the total. It's now down to 22% of the total. So not only is the total number shrinking, but it's shrinking as a relative number as well. Now, since all of this started, you would think at some point a news organization would, if you're interested in the truth and if you want to have a responsible discussion about the issue, at some point you would go find the truth. Yay? Well, I mean, I think that would be, pretty standard in my opinion. And so I've watched the news, and I've not seen it in any publication. So yesterday, I emailed Tucker Carlson Show. And why Tucker Carlson? Well, I mean, he does, right? He's a smart guy, and he'll get after both sides. And I haven't always been a fan of his, but I've become more of a fan of his over the years. And so anyway, I emailed this show and I said, hey, there's a data point that nobody in the media is reporting. Now, I don't know if my email spawned what you're going to hear next, but it's a hell of a coincidence if it didn't, okay? Tucker Carlson, on his program, had on Bernard, how do you say his last name, Kirak, former police commissioner of New York City, right? Everybody knows him. And so he came on last night, and lo and behold, I'll play. If I can find it here, I'll play what he had to say. Hold on. I'm struggling here this morning. What did I do? I don't know what I did. Hold on, I'll find it. Now, I hope this is it, so bear with me.
In fact, the incompetence derby between Andrew Cuomo...
Yeah, so it starts out, Tucker Carlson's talking about the incompetence derby, and that is, let me make one more point about all of what you've seen over the course of last week. This was a set play, right, for gangs and criminal enterprises, in that I'm sure based on the last time they saw rioting in a city, gangs use that rioting as cover to go loot. Okay. Well, obviously that secret is out. I don't know how they communicate it. I don't know if they have a website. I don't know if consultants say, yeah, when there's a riot, you know, the first thing you do is you go and you begin looting. Because it's an incredibly lucrative opportunity. And what's been different about this is they've obviously refined it. They haven't gone looting, right, in poor neighborhoods. They've gone to the wealthiest places. You saw Manhattan getting ransacked. You've seen Santa Monica, California. You've seen Rodeo Drive on Beverly Hills getting looted. a place called The Grove in the Fairfax district of Los Angeles being looted, and countless other places. So that's a set play now. So to me, if you're a governor and the mayor of a major city, you have to do something to counteract that. And so in my opinion, the set play on the good guy side is the when a riot starts and it begins to grow, the National Guard is immediately called out. And what the National Guard does is it provides local security so that police officers don't have to do that. And so and it provides area denial, which is standing at intersections and, you know, and just blocking them. They don't really get involved in the hot spots. It's not what the guards should do. And so, but they augment in order to allow the police force to have an overwhelming presence where it's needed. Okay. And so, so that just to me, as people in the postmortem of all this, if you can't see that this was choreographed, right, and that you need to adjust. And one of the things you're going to have to do is you're going to have to solve the problem of you being outnumbered at the point of attack. And the way you do that is you call it the National Guard, not 5 days into it, as is usual and customary, but you call them out immediately. And you turn over certain parts of the city, and it's a set play, and it frees up the police department to do this. And so, anyway, so there's a big discussion in New York. The mayor of New York City, I have to tell you, and that guy's an idiot. One of the things he said, he said yesterday, he was quoted as saying, when you bring in foreign military, all you do is escalate the violence. Like, wait a minute, foreign military? You mean the National Guard? Or are you talking about bringing in the French army? What are you talking about? Oh, the National Guard. Yeah, that's not a foreign military, stupid. And so in the meantime, Manhattan got sacked. I mean, this guy's an idiot. So anyway, the governor and the mayor of New York City have been at each other's throats throughout the COVID-19 thing. So Tucker Carlson starts his, you know, this segment with discussing that. So here is that statement, and then Bernard Kurek comes on and discusses the numbers.
In fact, the incompetence derby between Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, and Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, may be the most exciting competition to take place in New York since Secretariat won the Belmont. Governor Cuomo's demented policies on nursing homes helped kill thousands of New Yorkers. Now Mayor de Blasio has allowed Midtown Manhattan to be completely trashed by looters. They were coming through the front door of Macy's last night. They wrecked it. Today, though, Bill de Blasio refused to consider the idea of bringing in the National Guard to protect the city. The situation has become so bad in New York that Governor Cuomo attacked de Blasio today and openly speculated he might yet invoke a New York law allowing him to remove Bill de Blasio from power. Bernie Kurek has been involved in running the city for many, many years. He's the former police commissioner of New York, and he joins us tonight. Bernie, thanks so much for coming on. What do you make of this?
Well, look, I think you have incompetence on behalf of the mayor. You know, but I listened to the governor's comments talking about, you know, the NYPD. He specifically criticized the NYPD. Well, if the NYPD wasn't doing their job and the mayor's not doing his job, New York City is burning. Where are you? Where's the New York State Police?
Exactly.
Why weren't you involved from the beginning? What are you doing about it other than talking? You know, this isn't a competition for criticism. We already know that Mayor de Blasio is incompetent, in my opinion. We know that he is a super left-wing radical. We know he sympathizes with a number of these protesters and Antifa and all this other stuff. Look, I'm all for peaceful protesting, but the second peaceful protesting becomes violent, the second the protest is over, everybody's got to go, and the law enforcement, the police department, has to do everything in their power to move them or lock them up.
So one of the reasons that Andrew Cuomo attacked the NYPD is because every Democrat believes and now says out loud that police are racists. They are instruments of systemic racism, of white privilege, of white supremacy. Is that you ran the NYPD? You've seen the numbers. You know the reality. Is that true?
You know what, Tucker? I'm going to give you a set of numbers that the mainstream media just refuses to listen to or look at. And these are numbers that come out of the FBI Uniform Crime Report and the Washington Post. Last year, there were 10 million arrests in the United States. 10 million. Out of 10 million arrests, police officers were involved in fatal shootings 1,004 times. 1,004 times. 41 of those were unarmed people. The police shot unarmed people. If you listen to the rhetoric, every one of those people were black. You know what? That's a lie. That's completely false. It's not true. 19 white people, unarmed, were shot and killed by police last year. Nine were black. 19 whites, 9 were black. You know what? Everybody's talking about the blacks that were unarmed and killed by police. That number is systemic. It's outrageous. It's insane. There were 89 cops killed in this country in the line of duty last year. Nobody's talking about them. Nobody's talking about the 82 people that were shot in Chicago last weekend. In 48 hours, 19 dead. 82 people shot, 19 dead in Chicago. Baghdad didn't have that many.
It's unbelievable. Those are the facts. You would think news organizations would inform their viewers of the facts because that's their obligation.
Now, I'm not saying that Omri Radio made that happen, but it was a bit of a coincidence that Bernard Kurek came on later in the program and Tucker Carlson teed that up for him. But, I mean, think about it. So the issue, right, the narrative, and I was talking to Will Cosentini about this, I mean, the narrative that is out there, it's, I think that if you stood on a corner, and you wouldn't be able to do this for very long before you would get pummeled. If you stood on the corner and did man on the street interviews and just asked that question and then just listened to the response you got when you said, no, the number's 9, I think you would get some incredibly stunning video. Stunning video. You would be called a liar. You would be called a racist. You would be called a Holocaust denier. You would be called all of that. But let me tell you, this country's not going to have a responsible, grown-up conversation about race and how to get that number even lower until you have that conversation. Think about that. There was 41 unarmed people killed by the police, all varieties, in 2019. There was twice that number, exactly, 82 cops killed. I think that's what he said. 82 cops killed. 82 cops killed. Now, these are the things that make this conversation, right, that make this conversation get ugly in a hurry. So when you look at the number of, when you look at crime numbers in the United States, I mean, they are skewed by color, right? So if you want to talk about charged offense for murder, right, of all varieties, the demographics of murder. Now, I think blacks in this country comprise 13% of the population, right? They are 53% of those charged with murder. Now, the police deal with those people. Okay? When you look at armed robbery, blacks are 54% of armed robbery. when you look at weapons carrying possession, right, offenses, blacks are 44% of that. So those are what? Four times they're represented, 400% of the of their percentage of the population in these statistics. And that's what the police deal with. So my point is that if you want that number to go below 9, if you want that percentage to go south of 22%, then you've got to be willing, you know, to go to the truth. You know, and let me tell you one, I keep saying this, but, you know, one of the things I talk about in post-traumatic winning, and I had this conversation yesterday with a guy who called me from Montana who's putting together a program, had heard about post-traumatic winning and wanted to pick my brain. And I said, what's critical about it is you have to be willing to confront the truth. And if you're not willing to confront the truth, then post-traumatic winning is not for you. I said, so essential to getting to a better place is confronting the truth. And you can only see the path for post-traumatic winning if you'll confront the truth. And what is the truth? You're not going to get over it. You've got to talk about it. You got to live the self-disciplined life. You got to learn to coexist. And most importantly, you got to learn from the experience and then give to other people. And in that giving, you'll transform your own life. Now, you can't do any of that if you are not willing to confront the ugly truth. And ugly truths like this. If you struggle with trauma, you got to stop drinking and doing recreational drugs. And if you abuse prescription drugs, you got to stop doing that too. You got to stop. Now, I don't waste my time anymore saying, you know, you need to stop abusing. I say you straight up need to stop. That's what the evidence of our culture tells me. Over and over and over and over and over, you have to stop. Now, that's just the truth. And, I mean, I start, and you've heard me say this, I start post-traumatic winning with I'm going to tell you the truth, and if you don't like it, I don't give a shit. Now, and I would say the same thing about this, but the narrative, right, that you're seeing, in my opinion, does not want to talk about the truth. So what the narrative is and what my daughters would tell me is hundreds of black men are being killed on an annual basis. Well, that's not the truth, right? And I would venture to say that if I asked them, of the chargeable murders in this country, right, knowing that black Americans are 13% of the population, what percentage of the chargeable murders do you think they are? I think they would look at me and be like, I have no idea. And so when you talk about this issue, right, when you talk about this issue, you know, why would cops be more wary? More wary when they're dealing with black men? Well, because they're arrested more for murder, for armed robbery, and weapons charges. That's just a fact. Okay? 50% of those categories belongs to black men, even though they only represent 13% of the population. So anyway, that's the hard part about this issue, and I will tell you this: if you stood on the corner and you threw out these facts and say, we need to have a conversation about this, all right, a grown up conversation, so that we can make those numbers go down and we can put an end to this, you would get your ass beat. Likely, you'd get killed. You'd be one of those people on the ground where they're smashing your head with a brick or a 2x4, you know, and yelling, this motherfucker said this, right? Like it's like you fabricated a lie and it's just the truth. And in my opinion, that's the scariest part of all of this, is that the truth isn't rearing its ugly head. It's not being accounted for. It's not even a part of the discussion. And that's why, I mean, that's why I wrote Tucker Carlson yesterday. And I'm, at least somebody put it out there, right? At least somebody put it out there. Now, I saw something or heard something yesterday, and I want to link it to this. The academic idiots of this country that have sold the nation that somehow or other globalism, right? Globalism is going to be one of the keys for American prosperity, American success. You know, let me tell you what globalism has done. Globalism has exported blue-collar worker, blue-collar jobs, you know, out of our country. And those blue-collar jobs used to support families. Globalism has been one of the elements that have shrunk the American middle class. Right, the important part of the American middle class is that it gives economic hope to people that they're going to be able to live a better life than their parents did, and that if they go out and they work and they pursue their dreams, that they're going to live the American dream. The loss of economic hope sends people into the streets to riot. Let me say that again. The loss of economic hope, the shrinking of the American middle class, is not good for the nation. And so protectionism, I think so. Right? So protectionism to the extent. So is it that important that I get my soccer ball for $5 instead of $8? Is it that important that we export entire industries, right, from this country, and then the byproduct is people going in the streets because they, you know, why not loot? I don't see my path to a better life. So I thought that was kind of interesting, an interesting point yesterday, and I believe there's great validity to it. I have friends. I've done this show for, this is the fifth year. This is the first day of the fifth year of this show. And I have a friend who knows me, who calls me right in the middle of it. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, happy birthday, All Marine Radio. Starting its fifth year today. Pretty exciting stuff. Pretty exciting stuff. So, I'm fired up about it. You know what? And what I'm most fired up about, what I'm most proud of, is the work that my vision for All Marine Radio was that by talking about mental health, that maybe it could help out and maybe it could make a dent in some of the, you know, behavior numbers that we see. And lo and behold, it has. And so I'm extremely proud of it. And I hope in the next 5 years that trend line continues. And that we can continue to come here and from our own veteran perspective, our own veteran Marine perspective, talk about issues that affect our community of veterans, that affect the nation, that affect the world, and do it in an articulate, fun, and interesting way. And I hope along the way that the message of post-traumatic winning continues to save people's lives. And that this thing, you know, just continues to grow. But again, what most concerns me about the country that I live in today is the fact that the truth doesn't seem to matter anymore. And I think that's terrifying. And I think that news organizations now, and let me even tell you, the Washington Post, okay, who is the custodian of that data. You know what they're, you know how they lead the web page? So at the top of the web page it says fatal force. And then the big headline is 1,028 people have been shot and killed by police in the past year. Now if you scroll down, right, to me, you have a choice to make as people start reading. The first headline they're going to read is going to be what? So the first part of this talks about why the database was installed. Now, over the course of 5 years, right, the shooting of unarmed black men in this country has decreased dramatically. 56%. Shrunk in relative terms from 40% of the total to 22% of the total. That's their data. And they bury that. They bury that. The first headline that you read is rate of shootings remains steady. And so you'd think the truth would matter. And it just doesn't seem. The narrative is much different than the truth. Okay. And I remember, I think it was during the Ferguson thing. And I remember Charles Barkley saying, look, man, there's two messages here. And we've got to come to grips with them. Okay. Message one to the cops. We're not all murderers. We're not all bad guys. You got to stop treating us all like that. Okay. And then Barkley, who's unusually frank for an athlete, then said this, and to young, old black men, cooperate with the peace, with the police, and none of this happens. We both have a responsibility in this. There's two sides to this. The cops are afraid. Why are they afraid? And he talked about that. I think that was Charles Barkley. It might have been somebody else. So again, what I wish the president would do is I wish the president would form, and it needs to be led by a black man, right? It needs to be led by a black man. And to me, the guy to lead it is Senator Scott from South Carolina. And he needs to be the head of a task force that looks into this issue of systemic violence by the police against black males, specifically unarmed black males. What is the problem here? How do we get beyond it? How do we continue to force that number down? And you got to look at the whole problem. And then what you have to have is, I think there should be civilian people, and they got to be credible people. And I think the president ought to announce that today. Hey, and I think just like with the coronavirus task force, I mean, I think people paid attention to it. They listened to it, you know, have hearings, whatever. But they've got to tell the whole story. Think about that. 9 unarmed black men were killed last year in the country. 82 police officers were killed in the country last year. 19 unarmed white people were killed in the country last year. 82 cops were killed in the country last year. So, I mean, that's all part of the story. But again, the biggest, most disturbing part of the story is that the truth doesn't matter. And that's a choice that the organizations like the Washington Post, organizations like CNN, right? They bury that. That's a conscious decision by their news directors not to report that. It's out there. I mean, shit, if I could find it, anybody could find it. All you got to do is be interested in the truth. What is the truth relative to this issue? What is the number? Geez, I don't know. Let me look it up. And so, anyway, good morning to you. Andy Milburn's going to join me again today. We're going to talk about some other stuff. So looking forward to that. So good morning to you on the first day of the fifth year of All Marine Radio. I have to tell you, it's hard for me to believe that. Yeah, honestly, it's hard for me to believe that. That this was an idea that I had, and I wasn't sure it was going to work. And my thought would be that, and part of it has worked, part of it has not. It's not easy to get people to, you know, to pay for advertising on for a show like this. And so, that was a part that didn't work. Then the guy who was in charge of all the advertising sales, he quit. And so it's a bit of an amazing story that All Marine Radio is even here. And, you know, and Bob Nielsen is a big reason why it's still here. And now the ability to go around and speak about post-traumatic winning funds All Marine Radio. So I couldn't be more proud of the work that All Marine Radio has done, the people that I've met, and hopefully the good work it will continue to do when this COVID-19 thing kind of eases up and life gets back to some form of what we consider as normal. But day one of year five, welcome to All Marine Radio. So as we celebrate our birthday today, United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Good morning to you. This is dedicated to all the people that have made this program something. From the people that come on it and are the voices that I speak to on a regular basis, to guys like Bob Nielsen, who supported it financially, he and the 100 Entrepreneurs Organization. And also to I'd be remiss if the guy who really opened the door for the message of All Marine Radio to get to a wider audience is General David Furness. Going and doing post-traumatic winning for the 2nd Marine Division last year was an incredible opportunity. To share the wisdom that I have listened to for 4 years, now into the fifth, of veterans that have come on this radio, talked about their combat experiences or their traumatic experiences in training or in life, and then been courageous enough to talk about the aftermath. You know, how do you live with it? And so this is dedicated to all those people. And this has been, for me personally, just an incredible experience. And let me just tell you this, for my friends as well. I mean, I have a lot of friends, people that I've met, and people that listen. And I can tell you this, their lives have been fundamentally changed by this, right? Their lives, the way they reach out to people, the way they help people. And so it has not only enriched my life, but the lives of my friends. And I can't imagine my life without doing this. So this is dedicated to all those people that have helped along the way. In particular, some really important people that opened doors, that were watersheds. As I said, Bob Nielsen for keeping it going, and then General Furness for really allowing and opening a door to an opportunity that would allow a much broader audience, and that audience is even going to get bigger. So this is dedicated to all of them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. Time for us to check the weather here on the day after our birthday. 5-4 years old. Yeah. Currently, it is, it's heated up on the East Coast. It is partly sunny in 84 in Quantico. It is sunny in 83 down the coast at Camp Lejeune. 29 Palms reports sun and 90 already. Going to be hot in Southern California. Camp Pendleton, sun and 73 already. And Camp Smith in Hawaii, the sun coming up. How about that? As morning gets earlier, as we approach the longer days of the year. Partly sunny and 74 in Hawaii right now. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 81. in south central Afghanistan. It is clear, dark, and 89 early in the evening, and a pleasant day in Iraq. In western Iraq, it is sunny and 95. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, the day after the birthday, it is fair and 71, looking for a high of 80 degrees today, 75 tomorrow, and 70 on Friday. That is a look at your weather. When we come back, the Secretary of Defense has come out and said that he opposes sending active duty troops into streets to quell protests. So, and let me tell you, what's interesting about that isn't that he's come to that conclusion, because that is the appropriate conclusion, okay? Now, in extremis, right? In extremis, as in California, when Los Angeles was burning after the Rodney King riots, and the guard has already been called out, and there's not enough of them, to me, then I got it. And it might be appropriate then. But the president played that card off the top of the deck. And I think it was, as I said, Donald Trump's bedside manner sucks. And so I don't know if he was trying to, you know, want people to think that, you know, I could do this. But what's interesting about Secretary Esper saying this is this. He's a B-team guy, right? He's not an A-team guy. He was hired, in my opinion, because he's a B-team guy. And what can you do with B-team guys who are just happy to be there? Right? You can tell them what to do and they'll do it. Now, Jim Mattis going to do that? Not only no, but hell no. Okay, would Mark Esper do that? Well, as a B-team guy, he's supposed to. So what's interesting, and I'll read you what he said when we come back, is that B-team guy stands up and says, yeah, he comes out and opposes the president. So the question is, how long is Mark Esper going to keep his job? Okay, that's the question. Because once you defy Donald Trump, you go to the other side of the ledger. Okay? And, again, flawed human being, certainly. Okay? Flawed human being, certainly. But, as he, again, does the right thing with NATO, does the right thing with China, has been great for the economy. And, again, I'm over the fact that the President of the United States has to be a perfect human being. Because I say this all the time. Barack Obama seemed like a wonderful man. I don't know that. He's by all everything I see externally, he seemed like a good guy. He was a terrible president, though. So we don't need a great human being, right? We need somebody that secures the nation and makes the economy go like crazy, right? Donald Trump does a lot of those things. Okay. Incredibly flawed human being. What's interesting is Esper standing up to him. We'll talk about that when we come back. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. The day after our birthday, the first day of the fifth year, and then Andy Milburn in a few minutes. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, enough of that. Not screwing around in the fifth year. Time is short. Top story, Esper says he does not support the use of the Insurrection Act, did not plan to participate in the Trump photo op. Defense Secretary Mark Esper on Wednesday issued a remarkably strong... Richard Sisk wrote this. Now, Richard Sisk, former Marine, he's a Vietnam-era guy. And I interviewed him once here on All Marine Radio for something that he wrote about his basic school class. I want to say his basic school class of 1967 that went to Vietnam and suffered just an absolute ton of casualties. Anyway, he wrote this. He, as a reporter, he even notes this in the story. Defense Secretary Mark Esper on Wednesday issued a remarkably strong statement in apparent opposition to the president, saying he opposes invoking the Insurrection Act and sending active duty troops into the streets at this time to quell violent protest. In a Pentagon briefing, Esper broke his lengthy silence regarding the surge of protests nationwide following the May 25th death of George Floyd. Quote, I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act. We are not in one of those situations now. Esper said he regrets urging governors to dominate the battle space against protesters in a Monday call with the president. The SecDef has come under fire from retired four-star generals and others for those remarks. In retrospect, I would use different words, you think? Yeah, I mean, I talk about tone deaf. The president is king of it. It's the worst thing he does. And, you know, now Esper, you know, on the heels of getting wire brushed by some pretty substantial people, he changes his tune. There was a story, and I used to live in this area, but Grand Forks Air Force Base had a homicide. And the parents of one of the victims are describing the incident as domestic violence. The parents of one of two airmen killed on Monday at Grand Forks Air Force Base in North Dakota said their daughter was a victim of domestic violence. Natasha Apogian, a 21-year-old from Phoenix, Arizona, was just beginning her Air Force career at the North Dakota base. Her parents, Brian Murray and Megan Apogian, said on Tuesday in a statement about their daughter's death, "We're torn apart by the loss of our daughter to a senseless act of domestic violence. Natasha had recently joined the Air Force, was just starting to embark on a career to serve her country. The base has yet to release the names of the airmen involved in the..." You know, you give people instructions, man, and they don't follow them. The shootings occurred at 4:30 a.m. in a dormitory on base. So anyway, I say that because I have a link to that. my favorite website, Just the News, headline: Rosenstein agrees that by August of 2017, there was no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. So Rod Rosenstein testifying right now. And so made for TV event, in which, let me tell you, there's substantial questions about what the fuck was the FBI and the Justice Department doing. All right. From USNI News, USS Theodore Roosevelt back in Guam picking up the remaining sailors before resuming their deployment. So that's interesting news. And a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff blasted President Trump. This is by Jeff Zazulowitz, who I like. Retired U.S. Navy Admiral and former Joint Chiefs Chairman Mike Mullen spoke out Tuesday against the use of the National Guard and other personnel to clear protesters from outside the White House on Monday night before President Donald Trump walked over to the damaged St. John's Church and held up a Bible for the cameras. In a piece published Tuesday on the Atlantic's website, the White House former top military advisor who oversaw the killing of Osama bin Laden said he was sickened by the action, adding there was little good in the stunt. Quote, "I have to date been reticent about speaking out on issues surrounding President Trump's leadership, but we are at an inflection point, and the events of the past few weeks have made it impossible to remain silent." Admiral Mullen, he clicks off, say, top five stories in early bird, and then we'll get Andy Milburn on. One, guard troops in D.C. say they want to give people the opportunity to express their First Amendment rights. That's kind of a weird headline, right? The guard is there as an organization. They're not there as individuals. So it's kind of, like I said, kind of weird. And really, what you've seen the guard do in other cities is they're not at the hot spots, right? Because that's not really what they do. They are a force multiplier in that they go assume duties, you know, security around different sites so that police officers can be relieved of those and go join in those events that deal with the public. Headline number three, after George Floyd's death, Trump administration told military service chiefs to remain quiet about the unrest. This is in the Washington Post, written by Dan Lamont. A week after the killing of George Floyd, the Air Force's top enlisted member took to Twitter to say he too was a black man. right? What happened? And that is what Command Master Chief of the Air Force, Kaleith Wright, in response on Monday evening, okay, that thing went viral. At least twice in the past week, senior Trump administration officials in the Defense Department directed service chiefs to keep quiet about the issue, even though some expressed an interest in responding to the painful moment in the nation. The officials, who spoke, as always, on the condition of anonymity, said Secretary of Defense Mark Esper wanted to address the issue first. However, he did not do so until Tuesday night, more than a week later. Quote, and here's Esper's statement. I, like you, am steadfast in my belief that Americans who are frustrated, angry, and seeking to be heard must be ensured that opportunity. Esper wrote in a memo to U.S. troops, and like you, I'm committed to upholding the rule of law and protecting life and liberty so the violent actions of a few do not undermine the rights and freedoms of law-abiding citizens. Esper asked service members to stay apolitical during these turbulent times. So, that in the news. And then the last story. Esper on church photo op. I thought we were going to talk to the troops. So, much political intrigue around the Pentagon. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Andy Milburn going to join me. More of this fine program as we start the fifth year. Coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.